This paid program may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. For 15 years, the IBM Center for the Business of Government has sought to connect research to practice, sponsoring third-party research on a broad range of public management issues facing us today. Federal agencies and academics have long discussed the importance of cross-agency collaboration. But recent changes in law and advances in technology have led to a new environment that makes cross-agency management far more achievable. The GPRA Modernization Act of 2010 requires the development of government-wide priority goals and greater coordination among agencies. But requiring is different than doing. Is there a recipe for successful cross-agency relationships that are enduring? Or is each initiative so dependent on context and personality that there is no way to offer general principles of success? What two dimensions are necessary for effective collaboration? And how can agency leaders and OMB foster cross-agency collaboration as a way of doing business? Today, we'll explore these questions and so much more with Dr. Jane Fountain, author of the IBM Center Report, Implementing Cross-Agency Collaboration, A Guide for Federal Managers. Dr. Fountain has been an astute observer of cross-boundary relationships in a wide range of policy areas of the past two decades. Jane, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
It's great to be here.
Jane, federal agencies and academics have discussed the importance of cross-agency collaboration for some time, but recent changes in laws and advances in technology have led to a new environment that makes cross-agency management far more achievable. Would you describe the key aspects of this new environment for cross-agency collaboration? What are the political realities of today that make it so possible and necessary?
Well, there are several things to talk about here. First, we have an administration that's highly interested in modernizing the apparatus of the federal government. President Obama said in 2011 something that's been widely quoted. I'll quote it here. We cannot win the future with a government built for the past. We live and do business in the information age, but the organization of the federal government has not kept pace. So that top leadership emphasis is quite important. Second, this is a radio show for IBM. Technology and technological innovations have made it so much easier technologically to communicate across agency boundaries, to share information, to share data, and to share operations and procedures across agencies. So in a nutshell, the coordination costs of working across agencies are lower because of technology. Now, there are lots of other challenges, but technologically, there's a potential there that people sense and want to realize. There's complete recognition at this point in our history that complex policy problems, here's another area, lie across boundaries. We're not going to change the organization of all of our agencies, but we have problems like disaster relief, which we're facing right now, food safety, homeland security, social welfare problems that lie across the boundaries of several agencies. We can't address these problems without cross-boundary projects. And then last but not least, certainly not least, economic efficiency is critical. We waste taxpayer money when we have excessive redundancy across the government. And that kind of redundancy always has a habit of growing up across agencies over time. And from time to time, we need to go through and streamline things and reduce overlap. So those are some of the reasons why cross-agency collaboration is really critical right now.
Jane, your report references the GPRA Modernization Act of 2010. Could you provide us a brief overview of the key elements of this act? What are the new requirements, and how does it encourage or mandate cross-agency collaboration?
So the GPRA Modernization Act is a piece of legislation that extends the original act, which was passed in 1993, and it requires stronger development, as you just said, of government-wide priority goals in order to develop, in order to put into effect and realize those government-wide priority goals. It requires greater use of cross-agency coordination. In my knowledge, this is the first piece of legislation that so consistently and adamantly requires cross-agency coordination. That's a big shift. So how does it do that? First of all, it requires agencies in their strategic plans to identify how they are collaborating with other agencies. And then, perhaps more importantly, it requires the federal government, the executive branch, to develop a set of government-wide goals. We have about 14 of them, and the cross-agency coordination that's necessary for those goals. It calls on the Office of Personnel Management to identify skills and abilities for public managers to be able to work effectively across agencies. That's something new. And it establishes something called a Performance Improvement Council. This is an interagency body directed by law to share best practices across agencies and to facilitate cross-agency coordination. And there are new positions in each agency for people who will staff that Performance Improvement Council. I should also mention that for this law to be effective, Congress may have to change a bit how they think about their committee and subcommittee jurisdictions, because historically those have lined up with separate agencies and programs. If we're going to have more cross-agency capacity building, we need a counterpart to that in the Congress.
Jane, could you elaborate on what exactly cross-agency priority goals are? Perhaps you could illustrate the purpose and intent of CAP goals by giving us an example of them in action.
Sure. There are two types of goals, two primary types of goals here. One set of goals are called outcome-oriented goals. These are in a limited number of policy areas that cut across agency boundaries. The other main type of goal are management support goals. These are for management improvements that should have validity across the government in financial areas, in human capital, in IT, in procurement, in property management. Now, for each of these goals, OMB has to name a lead government official who will be responsible for coordinating these efforts to achieve the goals. So there are 14 of them. Let me name them. Among the outcome-oriented goals are to increase exports, number one. Number two, entrepreneurship and small business, for government to improve its services and support to entrepreneurs and to small businesses. Number three, broadband, increase broadband access to a much larger percentage of the country. Four, energy efficiency, reduce direct and indirect greenhouse gases by changing government and other activities. Veteran career readiness is another one. The government will work across agencies to help veterans become more career ready, more competitive in the job market. STEM education refers to science, technology, engineering, and math. The goal here is to produce more graduates in the STEM fields, because this is a large part of where the future of the country lies. And then the last of the outcome-oriented goals is in job training, for the government to do a better job working across agencies to provide the kind of training people will need to enter the jobs of the future, the jobs that the country will need. And the management improvement goals, I'll go through these more quickly, those have to do with cybersecurity, sustainability, real property management, cutting and reducing improper payments, data center consolidation. We have a large number of data centers across the country. We want to consolidate that number. Closing skills gaps. Here, these are skills that are needed in the federal government workforce where we don't have enough skilled workers. And then finally, something called strategic outsourcing, which is basically doing a better job of procuring the services and products the government needs at lower cost. So those are the 14 goals in a nutshell.
Jane, goal leaders for the interim CAP projects are presidential or OMB staff and not agency executives. Why adopt this approach as opposed to an agency leader or managed partner approach? What are the benefits and challenges of using this approach?
Okay, so here we really are in the land of trade-offs. At its most basic, centralization gives the government more coherence, people with a higher level perspective, experts and leaders who will tend to have more authority, more formal authority. A more decentralized approach, for example, using agency executives, would provide more, perhaps, on-the-ground, detailed insight and knowledge that might be missed by people at higher levels. So this is the centralization-decentralization trade-off we're talking about. We have now at least three presidential administrations' worth of experience on cross-agency. I won't go into all the details. I think in line with performance management, leadership that is being built within OMB, by having the presidential or OMB staff leading these projects, you build a sense of coherence, perhaps an ability, propensity for the various cross-agency priority project leaders to interact with one another regularly at roughly similar levels. The challenges, as I say, is that you can have people who are more isolated from the real challenges that agencies are facing and how they might design ways to address these priority goals. So it is a trade-off, and we will have to see how this works out.
Jane, your report identifies at least four institutional processes that serve as constraints to effective cross-agency collaboration. Would you elaborate on each of these constraints, and what can government executives do to overcome these constraints?
Okay. The way that the U.S. federal government is structured leads to some very serious constraints on cross-agency collaboration. There is no doubt about that. So the first one, what people call stovepipes, are the sort of autonomous nature of the departments of the executive. Why are they autonomous? Because they have very clear command and control structures that organizations, experts think of as very vertical. There are super and subordinate chains of command that are quite clear. That brings a sort of clarity and elegance to each department and each agency, but it also makes it difficult to work more horizontally in a network fashion. The second institutional constraint are legislative processes and laws that send government executives mixed signals. So there are often legal requirements to cooperate, but the resources and the authority are not given to agencies to implement that cooperation. Many, many laws, many legislative acts are specifically to agencies. So sorting out these mixed messages from hundreds of legislative acts that accumulate over time makes it difficult at times to work across agencies. The third area are what I call blurred lines of accountability that crop up in cross-boundary relationships. In this elegant bureaucratic, traditional bureaucratic approach, each decision maker knows exactly to whom they are accountable, and legislators, elected representatives can look to see who exactly did what, when, and where to identify accountability in a very precise way. When we begin to work across boundaries, those lines become blurred, and it should be obvious to everyone that in a government like ours, that makes accountability more difficult. So that's a real challenge. And then finally, the budget process in the federal government is set up to inhibit shared resources. Budgets are authorized and appropriated to specific agencies, to specific programs, for specific purposes. And so when we begin to share purposes and share programs and work across them, it's not clear how budgets should be authorized, should be appropriated, and should be used and accounted for. So how do you start to overcome these constraints? I think first, individual managers and executives, and then agencies, and then the government as a whole, have to make a calculation that working across boundaries is going to be worth more. It will be worth the additional coordination, the additional costs and risks of doing things in an agency-centric way. So those perceptions have to be in play. How else can we overcome these constraints? The president, the executive bodies, and OMB, the president's organizational apparatus, if you will, has developed, and we certainly had these throughout our history, interagency groups, councils, task forces, working groups, and a series of processes that help to provide an environment for cross-agency management, cross-agency systems. And then coming back to the Congress, I think we are seeing more awareness of cross-agency capacity building and its importance. You see that in the GPRA Modernization Act. So more legislation and refinements to legislation that recognize cross-agency are going to be helpful as well.
Jane, though there may be striking similarities between managing across boundaries and managing within an agency, what must managers do to effectively work across agencies or across boundaries? And as a follow-up, would you elaborate on the three sets of skills needed to build and sustain cross-agency collaborative management?
So let's start here with the basics. Whether a manager is working across boundaries or within an agency, they have to do the following things to work toward a goal or to make a project or program effective. First, they need to marshal the right expertise and talent, find the right people for the task or the project at hand. Secondly, they need to find and hold on to, sustain the resources they need. And those resources have to be commensurate with, they have to be aligned with the task, the project, the goal. The third thing that has to happen is a development, if they're not already there, of systems, of practices, of procedures for the type of problem solving that will be needed, for the decisions that will have to be made, and for resolving conflicts that are inevitable and that will have to be surfaced and discussed and resolved to an extent enough so that the process can go forward. They may not ever be fully resolved. We call this quasi-resolution of conflict. And then they have to develop and be able to monitor and enforce a set of rules that have to do with who will do what the pacing of this project will be, what the deliverables will be, what practices will be germane to the process. So all managers have to do those things all the time. What's different when you're working across boundaries? You're often working without formal authority, and here's where the new legislation is so important, because it's adding in some of that authority that wasn't there. Traditionally, experts and researchers have talked about something called indirect management, managing without formal authority, the use of persuasion, the use of negotiation, of conflict resolution becomes very important, because you can't simply order people to do things. It's not clear that you can ever really just order people to do things and expect them to be done. But when you're working across boundaries, these indirect management skills are even more important.
What are the characteristics of an effective collaborative manager? We will explore this question and so much more when our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. What is fast government, and how can focusing on time and speed deliver real and lasting benefits? How are VA and HUD working to end chronic homelessness among veterans? What is national health security, and how do we get there as a country? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. All of this and more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Dr. Jane Fountain, professor of political science and public policy at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and author of the IBM Center report, Implementing Cross-Agency Collaboration, a Guide for Federal Managers. Jane, your report for the IBM Center notes that effective collaboration consists of two dimensions, people skills and organizational processes. I'd like to explore the people dimension. What are the characteristics of an effective collaborative manager?
Okay. There, in the report, I have a table that brings together the skills that various researchers and experts in this area have noted consistently in time after time, study after study, project after project. I list about 25 of them. I think you can boil these down to a couple of areas. First, what consistently comes up in terms of skills are strong interpersonal skills. Managers and executives who can build strong professional relationships. So what's beneath this? You can think of these as sort of sub-skills or skills that allow someone to build strong professional relationships. These are building trust, being fair, having a sense of fairness to multiple parties, flexibility, active listening, and ability to actually take in what different parties with different perspectives are trying to bring to the table. So this requires strong communication skills. And here I note both the listening part of communication as well as a sort of rearticulation and framing of what needs to be done in a way that all parties can sign on to, and then conflict resolution. Another dimension that's important here is a specific kind of leadership. So it's not just that people need leadership skills, but for cross-agency and cross-boundary processes, we need people who see the big picture. When we're thinking of government-wide efforts and goals, that is the big picture here. And these executives are also good at creating shared meaning, a shared direction to be able to envision new or different ways of operating. And they are executives who have the creativity, if you will, to frame and reframe problems in a slightly new way that allows agencies and agency managers to sign on to this different way of doing things.
So collaboration depends critically on the interpersonal skills of individual managers. A director of a successful large cross-agency initiative describes his management style as that of a conductor. To that end, would you elaborate on the key skills of a network broker?
Sure. You know, this metaphor to a conductor is an interesting one, because conductors are not composing the music while they're conducting the orchestra. The composition has been done. The musicians are playing. They may be reading separate parts, right? The trombones, the violins, the percussion, but all of those parts have to come together. So the conductor, remember, does his or her work in a sort of silent but very effective way to bring forward or dampen different parts of the orchestra or the jazz group, whatever they're conducting. And ultimately, they're not there to see the conductor, to see that one group gets what they want all the time, but to meld all of these parts together. So a network broker is a little bit like this, because they are particularly good when they're effective at working with people whose perspectives may differ and crafting something that is going to work for a number of different parties with different constraints. So again, this involves a lot of listening and a sort of creativity to craft something that will be fair. Fairness comes up a lot in terms of skills. Parties sign on when they believe that their views are going to be well and faithfully representative. We think about political leaders building coalitions, typically think about civil servants and bureaucrats making and enforcing rules. But this activity of network brokering is really about building and sustaining coalitions.
So, Jane, what is that glue that holds together a network of government officials across agency boundaries? And to what extent does that glue, which is social capital, depend on trust, norms, and networking to be successful?
When I use this term glue in the report as a sort of source of cohesion over time, of stability, right? Glue makes things cohere. It has three components. Trust is one of them. Trust here does not mean unfettered, blind trust in which some mythical agency executive would simply hand over a large swath of their responsibility. No, trust means a kind of certainty, a bet, based on interactions, repeated interactions or transactions, that the other actors in the group are going to come through reliably, that they will do what they've said that they're going to do, and that you can stake activities on that. So trust is critical. So the second dimension of this glue are a set of norms or practices that all the parties agree to and are working under about how decisions will be made, who will have a voice on what types of decisions, how conflicts will be resolved, and basically who has the authority to make what types of decisions in this partnership. And then the third element are networks. There is an identifiable group, a community of practice, if you will, of experts, of managers, of government officials who are working together, who get to know one another's challenges and constraints and their goals, and who have a sense of cohesion and a bit of institutional memory. So those are the three elements of this glue that would hold together a project group of officials across agency boundaries. I refer to it as social capital. There's a stream of research that goes back now well over a decade on social capital. It's an important line of thinking, and this concept of social capital is important because it helps us break through the idea that government executives and agencies are essentially and always self-interested, and so they can only compete, they can never cooperate. If that were the case, we could not talk about cross-agency collaboration. So social capital gives us a language we can use to talk about collaboration that is robust and that is rigorous.
Jane, I'd like to understand what makes a group a team. What are the five conditions that demonstrate that a group is really a team? And does the report indicate how to foster these conditions and build an effective cross-agency team?
Yes, it does. And here we need to take our hat off to a terrific researcher who died just a few months ago. Richard Hackman spent his professional life studying teams, what makes them effective and when they're ineffective and why. And he spent some of his time researching teams in the government. These five conditions come out of his work and the work of some people who worked with him. So five conditions. First of all, something that may seem obvious but that is very important. The composition of the team is clear and it's recognizable. The membership is fairly stable over time. Why? The members have to get to know one another. They need to know what people's working styles are. They need to know what the goals of each member are if they're going to meld into something that will become a team. The second condition is that this team has clear and compelling direction. There is a focus on ends. There is a focus on achieving something, not just the exercise of means. Third, the team has to have a structure, a set of tasks, a composition for those tasks, a set of practices and processes that they use to work toward their goals. An effective team also needs to have sufficient support and resources to get the job done. And then finally, most effective teams are going to have access to an external champion, someone who's outside the team and who has the authority to help resolve difficulties that the team may not be able to resolve themselves, someone who can help leverage new opportunities that might be out in the environment and can help with major transitions. So those are the five conditions that demonstrate that a group is really a team. Now, how do you foster that? Well, first, get the right composition and try to make it stable. A lot of cross-agency groups have relied on many members who are on detail for their agency and who may be quite part-time and hard-pressed because they may have a regular job that they're doing plus this cross-agency project. If there aren't enough people to make this group stable and robust, it will be hard to have a team. Someone or some group is going to have to set the direction. It can't be completely externally set, because otherwise you won't get the buy-in of the team. The structure of the task and how the work will be accomplished is going to have to be set up. Resources are going to have to be set up. These are one of the areas where I think government executives have a lot of skill, is in setting up systems and procedures, and once given a goal, figuring out how to get it done. So federal managers have an advantage here.
What are the key organizational processes for enhancing cross-agency capabilities? We will explore this question and so much more when our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. What is fast government, and how can focusing on time and speed deliver real and lasting benefits? How are changing work habits and technology decreasing the federal government's real estate footprint? And how are VA and HUD working to end chronic homelessness among veterans? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We go beyond the buzz to introduce and connect our readers to actual public sector executives who are changing the way government does business. All of this and more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Dr. Jane Fountain, professor of political science and public policy at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and author of the IBM Center Report, Implementing Cross-Agency Collaboration, a Guide for Federal Managers. Jane, your report for the IBM Center also identifies key organizational processes for enhancing cross-agency capabilities. Would you elaborate on those processes?
Sure. Now, what you should notice, and what I hope your listeners will notice, is that these organizational processes have something to do with those interpersonal and people skills. So these key organizational processes are setting significant goals, specifying the roles and responsibilities for the members of this cross-agency group, formalizing agreements. At some point, there is going to have to be a formalization of what is agreed to, a developing of shared operations, obtaining and figuring out processes and means to obtain the resources that the team will need, a creation of effective communication channels. We might think that because everyone has social media and email that they have effective communication channels, but there's more to it than just having the technology. And then finally, it's key that the team will be able to adapt through shared learning, because things are going to change over the life of the project.
Jane, would you give some insight into how a cross-agency initiative leader can develop shared operations and obtain adequate resources to meet their mission?
Okay. there's a wealth of accumulated experience here in our federal government. One insight is that the projects or the sub-projects on these cross-agency groups may often begin with something modest. We've all heard about small wins. So project members, while they are sort of testing one another out and testing the commitment and the robustness of this group, will engage in fairly modest goals. So in the exports cross-agency priority group, for example, the members, one of the things they did, among many, was to develop a shared brochure. That is, several agencies worked together on a shared brochure that would go out to businesses and other groups around the country to highlight services from the federal government across several agencies. Now, developing a shared brochure is a fairly modest effort, but that effort is a platform and, if successfully completed, allows the group to jump off into something more ambitious. So the Exports Initiative has also developed a shared web platform, exports.gov. In its initial form, it may be fairly modest. It was fairly modest, but it is growing over time in the depth and range of information and services available on that platform. And behind what the public will see is a growing ability of those agency managers to work together. So starting small with something modest and then letting those projects grow in ambition and depth over time is one way that cross-agency initiative leaders build shared operations. Another way is to take a procedure, a process that is working in one of the agencies, and then to share it across the agencies. Rarely do you see in the cross-agency projects developing something completely new. It's much too risky, number one, and number two, it's usually not necessary. So leveraging the innovations and the effective procedures and processes that are already resident within at least one of the agencies or programs in that group is another way to build out shared operations. This area of sharing resources and gaining resources is a tough one right now, of course, because we don't have Slack resources around. There's no magic formula here. In many of the previous cross-agency efforts in prior administrations, agency executives developed shared budgets for their project. They developed a formula for contributions based on either the volume of services or degree of use or some other metric, so each agency didn't have to pay in the same amount to this shared budget. They codify this with an MOU. In some cases, this took a year, 2 years to develop. This is not a trivial matter. And then all the agencies sign on, and then there's the task of actually collecting these resources and persuading agencies to continue to follow through on their commitments. I think you can see here that by having the cross-agency project leaders in OMB, a lot of this make work where agency executives had to come up with these or devise these strategies themselves should be made a bit easier and somewhat more streamlined.
Jane, why is it so important for cross-agency efforts to create effective communication channels? And what advice would you offer to those leaders in this area?
I don't think there's any way to get around the fact that you have to have meetings. Everybody hates meetings and people have too many meetings, but you're going to have some meetings, and they're going to have to be fairly regularly organized. Now, how do you get people to go to meetings? Have a clear agenda, have an important purpose, use people's time effectively and respectfully. Be sure that important decisions and ideas that are brought up and that are discussed at the meeting get fed into decision processes, right? That they go somewhere. In other words, what happens at the meeting needs to get implemented in some fashion or refined or readdressed. There are cross-agency groups in the federal government that are more than a decade old that still hold regular meetings because new issues come up, changes have to be dealt with, and the major parties have to get together. Now, some of this communication can be done through phone meetings, through virtual meetings, but face-to-face is important.
Interagency collaboration implies that partners across agencies can engage in shared learning. Would you elaborate on this concept of shared learning? What does it actually mean in practice? And how can cross-agency teams adapt through shared learning?
So basically, this concept of shared learning highlights that many of these cross-agency collaborations are going to be different from what you might think of as a hub-and-spoke system, where there's a lead agency or a central agency that is going to supply a service or a process for other agencies who will either buy it or sign on in some way. You don't really need shared learning in that kind of a cross-agency practice or collaboration. Shared learning means that any agency in the group, any party in the group might have part of a solution, might have an innovation, might have a process or procedure that could be useful to the entire group. So every part of the partnership is engaged in bringing important ideas to the table, and that means that the other parties need to be willing and able to learn from any one of the agencies in the group. So this is not a model that privileges one agency over others. I think that's what it means in practice. And this model is an important one because it builds commitment over time, it builds sustainability, and probably most importantly, it leverages good ideas and gets them into practice.
Jane, even with the rigors of performance management under GPRA modernization, I was wondering how critical is it for government executives to maintain flexibility and creativity in order to adapt to changing circumstances and situations without losing focus on their strategic vision goals?
It's absolutely critical. Flexibility and creativity here are not meant to be synonyms for chaos or synonyms for so much malleability that you do lose clear focus and clear direction. But there has to be flexibility because, let's face it, there will be technological change. Some of it we can estimate or envision, and some technological changes we won't be able to envision. There will be economic change, some of it, again, that we can estimate or anticipate, some of which will be perhaps surprising. There will be other external changes in the environment, political changes, legal changes, budgetary changes. So stability and procedural regularity and a focus are critical, but there have to be ways for flexibility and creativity to be maintained.
Up next, Jane Fountain, author of Implementing Cross-Agency Collaboration, A Guide for Federal Managers, offers advice on successful cross-agency relationships when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. What is fast government, and how can focusing on time and speed deliver real and lasting benefits? How can serendipitous collision change the way agencies do business? How are changing work habits and technology decreasing the federal government's footprint? Get your latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We go beyond the buzz to introduce and connect our readers to actual public sector executives who are changing the way government does business. All of this and more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Get your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Dr. Jane Fountain, professor of political science and public policy at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and author of the IBM Center report, Implementing Cross-Agency Collaboration, A Guide for Federal Managers. Jane, your report outlines two types of recommendations, those directed at policymakers and those directed to help managers and agencies engaged in implementing cross-cutting collaborative initiatives. I'd like to explore those recommendations. Would you identify and briefly describe the recommendations you offer to the Office of Management and Budget?
Okay. This report makes five recommendations to the Office of Management and Budget. First, OMB can be very helpful by developing management guidance for cross-agency collaboration. And this is guidance that agencies could use to begin to understand the process, to begin to capture an existing body of knowledge that has grown up among many different projects and that can be brought together. In this regard, OMB could produce templates for shared budgets, for example. Now, I don't mean just one template, because there might be different models, variation that needs to be captured. So by producing a sort of toolkit, management guidance for agencies, we could start to share some of the accumulated experience that has been developed over the years. The second recommendation to OMB is that OMB officials should continue to play two different types of roles, facilitator and enforcer. During the Bush administration, there were a number of cross-agency projects that were more modest in some ways than the CAPGOL projects. OMB surprisingly began to play a role as a facilitator in many of these collaborations by disseminating promising practices, by disseminating innovations, by bringing parties together. But there were times when OMB played its maybe more stereotypical role as an enforcer by moving a group beyond some impasse and forcing parties, frankly, to do things that they otherwise might not have done without that enforcement role. The third recommendation is for political appointees at OMB and in the agencies to continue to engage with key members of Congress and congressional staff, because this implementation of the GIPRA Modernization Act is going to require continued deliberation and continued discussion between OMB and the Congress. The fourth recommendation to OMB is that they continue to search for ways to build once, use many. This is a term that Mark Forman, the first CIO of the federal government, used. And what it means is to identify systems and infrastructure and processes that have already been developed in some agency and to see how they might be used in multiple and different implementations. So one quick example, some of the code, some of the software and systems developed for electronic rulemaking have been in the last year or so modified to help develop the new Freedom of Information Act online system, specifically the way that that system will track FOIA requests and their status as they move through agencies. So this reuse can save a great deal of money as well as time. And then the fifth recommendation is that OMB work with the Office of Personnel Management and with agencies to start building cross-agency skills and skill sets into performance evaluation for the senior executive service. If we're serious about government executives being able to work across agencies, they need to be selected, measured, evaluated, perhaps promoted on the basis of how well they can do that.
Jane, for executives who are assigned to build a major cross-agency effort, how can they do it successfully, and what recommendations do you offer in this area?
Well, here where these recommendations really recap a lot of what is in the body of the report. What should cross-agency leaders do? First, set and communicate clear, compelling direction and goals. It's not enough to state these at the outset. They need to be continually restated throughout these projects and throughout these efforts to keep people focused on goals. Second, fit the structure of the working group to the task. There is not a one-size-fits-all solution here. Different divisions of labor, different types of procedures and task environments are better suited to some problems than others. And so some attention to that set of systems and procedures is important. Cross-agency leaders should establish clear roles and responsibilities. People have to know who will do what, who's responsible for what parts of the project. they should develop formal agreements. Now, it's important not to try to jump to codification right away. There needs to be a period of deliberation, of the parties getting to know one another, of discussing what it is they're going to do and how they're going to do it. But at some point, those agreements really need to be formalized. And there should be enough flexibility in the agreement that they can revisit those documents and make changes when they're needed. Another recommendation is to develop these shared operations and shared resources. So it's not enough to have interpersonal skills. You have to have capacity-building skills, system-building skills, especially if you're working broadly across agencies. And then finally, we have to have performance metrics that can reach across agencies. So cross-agency collaboration projects will have a set of metrics that will go with them so that you can track and monitor and measure output and outcomes.
So Jane, as we close, I was wondering, could you tell me the key ingredients to successfully implementing a cross-agency initiative?
Well, there's not one, and there aren't three, but I think the ingredients really do come down to this combination of informal, interpersonal, professional relationship-building skills, as well as capacity-building skills in terms of systems, procedures, performance. One of the key ingredients, in addition to those, is the importance of meeting some of these challenges, and I think, again, keeping in front of members of these collaborative groups the enormous importance of being able to address challenges that lie across agencies is really a key ingredient to success.
So, Jane, what prompted your research in this area, and could you tell us more about how you conducted your research for the report and who participated and why?
Well, this report, it actually draws on many years of interviewing managers in from the very top of the government to mid-level managers working on how do we develop this shared bit of code so that our software will work across agencies. I interviewed managers and over several years have observed at fairly close range a number of cross-agency projects. Some of these projects began during the Clinton administration with the Reinventing Government effort, and they've morphed, they've changed and modified and refined over time and over successive administrations. I want to say that I really admire and I have a deep respect for the civil servants and the government managers and executives who've been forging a path, really, to a new information age government. In some cases, I met these people through executive programs that I've taught in. In others, I learned of their innovations and sought them out. In other cases, they sought me out for guidance. So a lot of the collection of information here drew on a wide range of studies, but also on sort of firsthand observations and discussions with the people who are actually building this new modernization of government.
Jane, I'd like to know a little bit more about you. Could you tell us about yourself and your areas of interest?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm primarily interested in how organizations and institutions, primarily in the government, in the United States, but in many other parts of the world, how those organizations are designed and how they're structured to solve the very complex problems that public policy brings to governments. So what I have tried to do throughout my career, it is to join bodies of knowledge that are not joined up as much as I think they should be. There is a wealth of management knowledge on organizational change, on innovative organizations that is largely in the business sector. And I've tried to join that up with politics, the very real politics.